Welcome to Activate Yourself with Geeta Sidhu-Rab, where we feature otherwise normal people who, because of events in their life, have turned left and done unusual, inspiring, incredible things, like build a business, become a happiness expert, marry a prince, create an empire, or like your host, set up a health and wellness business, Nosh Detox. Here's your host, Geeta Sidhu-Rab.
Hi, my name is Geeta Sidhu-Rab, and this is Activate Yourself. As always, we try and bring you people on the show that will inspire you, help you to think, help you to see things in a different way. Today's topic is going to be a little bit more difficult because I've long felt that the generation that is our children is somehow, did we abandon them? Did they feel abandoned? Did their life just turn too difficult? I'm not sure what happened, but I know that they are struggling and struggling mightily. And so to every extent. And so today's guest is going to be somebody who's going to talk to us about parenting and about making a difference and continuing to have hope. And I always do these long introductions. Let's not do that today. Let's just have her talk because I think it's really important. Lisa Bachmann, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming on. It was interesting because we were talking about how to introduce you and you talked about your son having made suicide attempts. And I was like, you know, the thing with this is that I was at a dinner last night, a charity dinner, and this woman said, yeah, my son committed suicide at 18. I hear this again and again, and there, but for the grace of God, go my children, because one of my children also tried to commit suicide. And I'm deeply grateful that it didn't work. She hasn't tried again and that we're in that place. But, you know, there's almost a place where you're on tenterhooks, just appreciating every day out of desperation. So tell me about you a little bit, please. Tell me, how do you come back from something like that?
Right. And the most important thing to know is the way to come back is through relentless work. It is not easy. It's very lonely. And, you know, there's such a stigma out there. Oh, they don't really mean it. Or how do you know? And the real key is open communication with your kids, with their friends, with everybody. It's open communication, establishing that trust. There definitely are signs, but the kids who tend to be the more serious, they're really good at hiding those signs.
Yes, because they're just waiting and biding their time.
Exactly. And so, but it's not only that. They think in a way, you mentioned before, you know, how do we know? And what's causing them to do this? The issue, part of the issue, and at least it was our issue, is that they have what's called distorted thinking. They don't think in the same way we do. And in their minds, they're this terrible burden and they're in pain. And yeah, the only way people think it's selfish, but it's actually not, because they're thinking that they will relieve you if you don't have to deal with them anymore. And so it's really a matter of understanding how they think, you know, and I love to tell this example of a time my son came home and he attempted suicide 3 times before he was 10 years old.
And oh my, I think, God,
incredibly,
before he was 10.
Yeah. He was and over a 2-year period. So his first attempt was at 9 years old and then 2 more at 10 years old. And, you know, we didn't want to believe
the hell.
I know. So the story that I was going to tell you is he came home from school one day with a math test that I needed to sign. And he had gotten 100% on this math test. And my reaction was, wow, you're so smart. And he looked at me and he said, no, I'm not. It was easy. And then it would inevitably lead into some kind of a meltdown because he truthfully thought I was lying to him when I said he was smart. So we ended up getting help from a social worker who literally came to our house 3 to 4 days a week. She would stay for hours at a time and it took 3 years. So that's why when I say it's relentless work, I'm not kidding. It was very hard.
I'm sorry. How does a 9-year-old even know how to attempt to commit suicide?
He knew.
Oh,
he knew.
I literally have a bursting headache just after what you just said. I can't. The agony, the guilt.
Right. Well, and I think the first time when he wasn't successful, he realized what he had.
Yeah, to get better, wrong,
if you will. So the first time he tried to jump out a window, and he wasn't successful. We caught him right as he was about to leap, but then he realized, you know, and we talked to him and we said, you know, you probably would have broken bones and it would have caused you pain. We didn't know how to deal with it. So instead he got more innovative and came up with a better way. And they're smart. These kids are so smart. And we learned that we have to be brave enough to actually come out and ask them, are you thinking of hurting yourself? You know,
they answer truthfully.
Many times they do. Many times they do. And our son did, which is ultimately what enabled us to get him help. And we had to learn a whole different way of talking with him. And we had to learn to flip the narrative, if you will. So like, if we go back to that math test, if what he brought it home 100%, I would notice and say, oh, you got 100%. And sometimes I would just leave it at that. Or I could say, wow, you got 100%. What do you think about that? And then he would say, oh, it was easy. And then my reaction would be, I love it when things are easy. So not affirming.
Okay. I'm so sorry. I actually have not caught up with you. I'm acknowledged to be a very bright person. And we just need to take a goddamn beat here. Literally, I haven't caught up. I'm stuck back in the conversation.
Okay.
Tried to commit suicide 3 times from the age of 9 to 10.
Correct. Yes.
That you caught your baby.
Yes.
Trying to leap out of a window. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I've got my head in my, I don't even understand how. Yep. I'm trying to resist the urge to swear fluently and long.
Believe me, I did all the time.
Yeah, no shit. We're just not allowed to put on air. I can't. I'm so sorry. I can't get. My brain is imagining the thought of my child at this. You are amazing.
Oh, thank you. You know what? We just did what we had to do.
You're amazing. Just stay with that. I'm really forgive me for. Obviously there's no alternative and you do the best you have to do. I totally understand that because you have to, but oh my God,
couldn't
have just changed you as a human.
Oh, it did.
1 minute to the next.
It did. It changed everything.
What the hell? In our lives.
Because we could not leave him alone. We had to make so many changes, and we kept telling him and reinforcing how important to us he was. And
wouldn't that make it worse? Because that's more pressure.
No, I mean it might have been, but the way that we did it was we just kept reinforcing how much we loved him, and we didn't leave him alone. So for example, when he went to school, I would walk him into the teacher. And then when I would pick him up, I would literally get him from the teacher. So we didn't leave him alone.
You only have one child.
No, I have three. I have two older. And talk about sucking the life out of the house. It really impacted the older two as well.
Oh my God, yes. Sure you have something else to talk about, and I don't even care. But I am so sorry that that has just reset my life almost. When my son was little, he was allergic to one of the injections he was given, a protein molecule, and he ended up going into anaphylaxis. And as he came out, he had eczema and asthma, and I spent the next 232 days in hospital with him.
Oh my God.
And well, we came home here and there, and then just went, I was like, we could just live here. It would be easier. And it was so interesting. It's so interesting me to hear you, because he died in my arms at one stage and they resuscitated him. Well, you're saying that, but I mean, look at you. And I went through that process and it broke up my marriage. It ruined changed my life. It literally ruined my life, right? It changed my whole life. And I will look at this child now who is in his 20s, and there's days where he decides he absolutely hates me. And I'm like, yeah, but you're alive to hate me. You know what I mean? You're like, yeah, whatever. You're still alive. And there's just a place where you will do anything to keep your child alive. Anything. But my God, Lisa, it changes you as a human, doesn't it?
It did. And my husband and I went through a very difficult time. And
yeah, no shit.
I still remember the night we sat down together and made the decision that we wanted to stay married. And that meant that I was too lenient and he was too tough. And so it meant
lenient and tough on whom? On your son.
On our son. Right. I let some, and both of us were at fault, because, you know, there were times that I needed to be lenient and there were times that he needed more tough. So we made the agreement that we would have to just really communicate incredibly well. And that there were times where I was going to have to say, okay, you handle this. And there were times that he was going to have to say, I'll handle it.
Okay. And I'm just going to have to go for a little break because it's that time. Thank God. Because, you know, my brain has now got scrambled eggs in it, and we will be right back. And when we come back, I would like a little, I'm sure there was something else you wanted to talk about, but I just need to understand how this impacted your family, because, you know, even today. So we'll be back in a second.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, aunt and deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
So we're back. How did his siblings feel about this?
It was very difficult for them because they lost friends. His behavior was so erratic that their friends' parents were afraid for their kids to come to our house or for them to even be with our kids. So what we did was we turned inward as a family. The rule in our house was family dinner and open communication. We did a lot together. We had movie nights. We put the picnic blanket out on the floor. My husband and I would each go on dates, if you will, with the other two so that they had one-on-one time with us. And we couldn't go together because we could never leave Justin as my youngest. We could never leave Justin alone. So one of us, my husband or I, had to be with him. I would not leave my daughter with him because that was too much responsibility. What if
how could you imagine if something happened? You ruin her life forever.
Exactly.
Was it a biochemical thing, do you think?
So he, yes and no. He does finally, when he turned 12, we finally got a diagnosis. And I can't even tell you how many doctors we went to trying to figure out why his behavior was so erratic. And he had 13 misdiagnoses until he was 12, when he was finally diagnosed with Tourette's syndrome. Because he was so different, He was so depressed. And we just didn't recognize all of that.
But isn't Tourette's syndrome the swearing one?
That's what most people believe it is. Now, he does swear, but less than 10% of people with Tourette's syndrome actually do swear. It's a combination of motor, which are muscle, and vocal, which are verbal tics. Some people with Tourette's syndrome hum, and that humming can be very soft, or they blink. My son just happens to have a more severe case, and it just took a while till he got diagnosed. And so he was different. He had no social skills. He had no friends, and he hated himself. And so it took us a
while. My God. I've gone back to my head in my hands.
Most of the kids, even, you know, the middle school kids and the high school kids, their self-images are so poor.
What the hell is this?
Right. And they don't believe us.
Yeah. I have the most beautiful children. Honestly, they are exquisite. And yes. I look at them. And anyone will look at them. They're mixed kids. And, you know, mixed kids have this ability to mix the best of everything kind of thing. And sure. They look utterly exquisite. And they will sit there and go, Mama, I need to get this done. I'm like, what do you mean? It's like, oh, it's like some surgery or it's a filler. Why? Because when I smile, you can see, oh, my God, this granularity of level of detail. No wonder every celebrity is screwed up, because our children are.
Yes. It's their self-image. And so what we had to do was to learn how to get him to build up his self-image, because I couldn't do it. I could not. I could tell him he was great, fantastic, handsome, athletic. I could tell him anything, and he didn't believe me. He thought I was lying. And so we had to get to the point where, you know, if he would come down with an outfit and say, how do I look? I would have to turn it around and say, well, what do you think? Because I couldn't, because if I told him he looked handsome, you're lying to me. So we had to really learn how to reframe everything. Because, I mean, these kids have so much pressure on them for grades.
Yeah, what do you do about that? How
and, you know, help? Something that we learned is that was incredibly helpful to us is that from middle school on down, so elementary through middle school, grades don't matter. What's more important is getting good habits.
Okay, what's the age for that? Sorry, we're not American. What does that mean?
Oh, I'm sorry. Probably 14. So when
14 downwards.
14 downward. It's much more important to work on their self-image, get their study habits, get them to feel good about their academic record. Because at least here in the States, colleges don't look at their records until they're in high school. So when it really doesn't matter, use that time to your advantage.
What do you do with social media though?
Yeah, that's really tricky. So we had to limit social media because kids hide behind the screen and they will bully other kids. And so we took him off of everything. He didn't get a phone. He wanted that phone so bad. He didn't get a phone until he was 14 years old. And it was, now my other kids had them because they were able to handle it, but he wasn't. And he argued with us at first, but he's 25 now. And he has actually come back to us and said, thank you.
The thing is though, you said something in your notes about being lonely. I, to this day, and my son is, you know, he's so old, I lie about his age, not mine. My son is 26 and he will become 27 this year. And it is absolutely insane that, I don't even know what I was going to say because my brain fell out of my head. I just it was so lonely. Mm-hmm. It was so lonely. Nobody wanted my son to go to their house because they were afraid he would eat something and die. They didn't want responsibility for it. Yep. And everywhere he went, he had to eat different food. And he had to be careful about the other kids. Everywhere he went, it was a frigging drama. And he was always the person singled out. And I'm like, I look back now and I'm like, that was a form of us bullying him because he was always isolated, you know? How did you learn to help with that?
No, and you did what you had to do. You had to.
There was no option.
That's right. And you know, that's where it sometimes, I think there's a definition between being your child's friend and being their parent. And as their parent, sometimes you have to do really, really tough things. You have to make those decisions that he's got to eat.
Yeah, no, he wouldn't have been alive if I hadn't made those decisions.
100%. Exactly. And so you just have to go with it. And so what worked for us, and I know everybody is different, what worked for us is we just turned inward to our family and we made being at home fun and exciting. And until his last 2 years in high school, that was the first time that he actually made a friend.
So what you said to me about the fact that with your marriage, you had to decide to stay married. But I mean, the toll, because I remember like my mother-in-law saying, this is your fault. This is your blood. It doesn't happen to us. And I was like, yeah, that's really helpful. Thanks. We should really.
You're right. No.
Like, shut up. You know, why you don't come and stay in or sleep on the floor in the hospital every freaking night? And if you're not willing to do that, why are we having this conversation? You
know? Right. Right. No. But I don't get the right to say that.
The only benefit of my son being so ill was I remember when we went through this really horrendous divorce and he was trying to take custody of the child. His mother said to him, you can't manage this child on your own. And I assure you, I'm never looking after him. He will die at my hands because it's so difficult to look after him. And his mother is the only person that should be allowed to keep this child. And I remember thinking, wow, thanks. Good to know. Right. Something came out of it. But I, you know, these are the really stupid things that you kind of remember 20 years later, 24 right. years later. How did you manage your marriage?
Well, and you know, and it's funny because you said you felt so lonely and I felt so lonely, but even though our stories are a little bit different, we were both feeling the same thing.
Yeah.
And if we can really get everybody to understand and be a little bit more open and vulnerable and willing to listen and be better friends, then we can realize that we're really not alone. And we don't have to feel that way. And that was really how we managed our marriage was, you know, we had to talk and we had to talk ad nauseum. So I had to explain in detail, this is why I think it's important we handle the situation this way. And then more importantly, when my husband was explaining the reasons for the way he wanted to handle the situation, I had to listen.
Yeah.
And so it, you know, and then we would go back and forth, sometimes heated, sometimes calm. And it got more and more calm as we got more experienced at doing it.
Yeah, you know, and as success is literally being alive another bloody day, isn't it?
1 second at a time.
I have to tell you that I wonder if I would have even allowed you to be a guest if I had known this before, because the absolute pain of the memories of this is bringing back is so immense. It's really shocking how horrendous that time was. And I look at my son now and he is not grateful for what I did. You know, okay. There's no part of
that's
him.
Hard.
I mean, obviously on some level, I'm sure he is, but there's no part of him that can cope with it. So his way of coping with it, I mean, he's not a bad person. That's not what I'm trying to say. His way of coping with it is to go with, you know, kind of thing. And I look at that and I'm like, well, that's okay. I didn't do it for the gratitude, but the feelings right. this conversation is bringing up. And it will be the same for so many women out there
yep.
who have had to deal with sick children, to children right. that don't fit the norm, for autistic kids, for anything, you know. We need to be so deeply compassionate for parents like this.
Exactly. And that's why I didn't really process everything we went through until about 2 years ago when a friend said to me, write a book.
Oh.
And so 2 years ago, I started down the journey of writing the book and I was never, ever sure if I was going to publish it.
Okay. Good time to take a break. Please give me a second. We'll go on a break and we'll come back and talk about your book.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
A for horses, B for mutton, C more cheeks, dig for victory.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better.
Marks and Spencer.
Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
T for two.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, we're back. Book. Tell me about your book.
So I started
Brave Woman.
Oh, thank you. Here, this is,
it's the book we wish we had.
Yeah.
And it really, like I said, it's, and this is him when he was little. It really started as my trying to process everything that we had gone through, because now he was an adult living on his own. And I was finding it difficult to go on. My whole identity was tied up in being his mother.
Yes.
And so I had
constantly being stressed and traumatized. And you're like, oh shit, I don't have to do that anymore.
Right. Right. You know, he can handle things on his own. I don't have to call him to say, did you take your medication? Did you do this? Did you do that? I don't have to do that anymore. So I started writing really as just a way to kind of process my own feelings and emotions. But then I still get calls. My son ended up becoming a motivational speaker, and I traveled the country with him where he spoke to kids. So it was very peer-to-peer. Parents often call me. And so I felt like I was looking in a mirror, like I'm talking with you, you're feeling the same emotions that I felt. And so the book really goes into a lot of detail on what I wish I would have handled differently, what I wish teachers would have done or would have known, what I wish doctors would have known, the things that I wish friends could have done for us instead of completely abandoning us. You know, they, and it's not that they did anything with spite or malice in mind.
No,
it was fear.
They try to protect themselves, right?
So right. And they didn't know. So the book gives them clues as to, I wish a friend would have just called to say, hey, I'm thinking about you. Because I felt so lonely. I thought nobody was ever thinking of me.
I remember being in the hospital with my son when he died and been resuscitated. And I was in my 20s, right? I was a baby. And I was in this intensive care in the hospital and he was in a coma. And I remember ringing my husband, his father, and going, can you fly in? I'm like, because we didn't live, I lived in England. He used to live in and out of it. And he was like, oh, let me try. I'm just so busy at work. And I remember turning to my mother and my father and saying, can you guys come out? And my father rang me and he said, you know, the thing is, the flights are so expensive at the moment. We're so wealthy. Okay, let's be clear. This was not a poverty situation. And I remember just being there thinking, wow, I am so completely alone in this. Yeah. So my family abandoned me.
Yeah, that's horrible.
And that, it's not even just your friends. It's the people closest to you, you know.
They're the most critical.
Yeah. Hmm? Wow, I don't think I've ever even said that publicly before, but it was horrendous.
Yep, it is. It's awful. Wow. It is awful. But there is a community out there. There is community that I just didn't know how to look for it at first, but eventually I found. And I'm hoping that through this book that people can really realize that they're not alone and that there are similar things that they're going through and that there is help. There are ways to get help. And I had to work on myself as well because my self-image started to decline, you know, 100%. Blaming myself and, you know, what did I do wrong?
Yes. And
so I needed to really learn that I had to give myself enough grace to know that I was doing the very best that I could and that mistakes were okay.
because if I made a wrong decision or a mistake, then we would figure out. So a lot of times it would lead to the right decision, because a lot of times you have to make a wrong decision in order to get to the right decision.
No, I think you do in life. Right. I remember being one of the few mothers that had these conversations. And then I remember looking around me and saying, wow, you know, there is no medical help, because nobody believes me and no one is giving this, like you were talking about, 13 wrong diagnoses. And then I was told, well, there's nothing we can do, you know. And I was like, what do you mean there's nothing? I was like, oh, well, there's nothing. And I remember I started to hold. I actually wrote my first book around this, because I which was like 600 years ago, but I would stand up and speak at events and talk about what it's like living with a child that was ill, what it's like trying to handle this process. And I remember doing that and thinking, you know, that hence was born my career for public speaking, because there was no other reason to do it. But I was like, I couldn't bear somebody else to go through what I had gone through and exactly. Feel like they were the only person it was happening to. And that's exactly what you've done.
Yes, that is my motivation 100%. I don't want other people to have to suffer the way I did.
It's truly, you know, there's this phrase that you're only as happy as your unhappiest child.
My husband says that all the time.
I am with you on that one, uphill and down dale, because it's so true. And there's also the thing that because you've obviously done a really great way of adulting your way through it. And I obviously didn't A, adult, and B.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. Yes, you did.
I don't think I was much of an adult really while this was all happening. But there's just a place where I remember not wanting to talk about it.
Oh, no. Right.
Because it was done. I was like, well, we've done this. Now here's where we are. And oh, my God.
Yep. Oh, there were times that I wouldn't talk about anything. There were times I wouldn't show any emotion because I felt like, I had to be strong, because what do other people say when they admire you? Oh, she's so strong. Yeah. So I had to be strong. So what I would do is, after my husband would fall asleep at night, I would literally go into the bathroom and just cry my eyes out.
Yeah.
That was the only time I would let any kind of emotion, like it would build and build and build through the day. And then I would explode at night all by myself in the dark, you know, with pillows so that nobody would hear me. It's very, very lonely. And when you said, you're saying my husband says that all the time. There's another saying that we use, and it goes to that need for friends. And it's, to the world, you might be one person, but to one person, you might be the world.
Yeah.
It really speaks to that. If we could just offer each other and ourselves that little bit of grace.
Oh, and some kindness, honestly. Yeah. Just a little. I remember that the person that really saved me was honestly his godmother. And she was just the one person that, and I didn't reach out very much because there wasn't space to live or breathe.
Or she did. Anything.
And what were you going to say? But I remember her constantly popping up and and saying things like, so did you eat? How are you? What have? And you'd be like, and you couldn't even drink, right? Because I was like, I just want to go get drunk. But yeah. To get drunk, because I had to be awake to manage the bloody process.
Right. Oh, yeah. Amazing. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was exciting. That really wasn't what I was expecting. So it's great to have on guests that make you, you know, deal with your own long-seated rubbish. Yay, that.
Yeah.
Thank you for that opportunity. I honestly had not been there for a while, so that's good. How do people find you? And where? Oh, they can buy your book. Go ahead, tell me more.
It's on Amazon. It's also it's on Audible. It's in an audio format, an ebook, as well as print. And my website is canyouhearit.org.
And what's the name of the book again?
The Book We Wish We Had.
The Book We Wish We Had by Lisa Bachman. Thank you, Lisa. I really appreciate your being able to have this conversation with you was great. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for allowing me to share. I think the more we share, the more people we can help.
I hope so. I'm pretty sure so, but I really hope so too.
I know.
This is the wonderful Lisa Buckman who joined me today. As you can tell, that was an unexpected show. I wasn't intending the show to quite go this way, but you know what? Sometimes you just gotta go where you gotta go. So thank you for joining me, and thank you for listening. And I will be with you again soon. My name is Geeta Sidhu Rob. This is Activate Yourself. Thank you so much for, being in my audience. Take care.
Thank you so much for joining us. Our goal was to give you pause, make you think about your life, and inspire you to say, wow, what if I tried to do that? If they can do it, so can I. Did it work? Let us know by finding us on social media at Geeta Sidhu Rob or at Nosh Detox. We upload new shows every 2 weeks here. And if you start to miss us, check us out on YouTube.